Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air.
Brr, it's getting cold in here. We're talking about the Arctic satellite boom. Join us. Hey, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Campbell, and back in the studio with me is my co-host, Peter. Hey, Peter.
Hey, Campbell. Hi, everyone.
All right, we have been talking about this Arctic satellite boom article, and the Arctic is a place that is very cold, but this is a hotbed of activity. What is happening up in the Arctic right now?
Right. Well, there is an increasing demand for satellites, for polar satellites. We talked yesterday about how a polar satellite is a satellite that orbits the Earth around the poles. It just goes from North Pole to South Pole and back up to the North Pole. But since the Earth is turning from east to west underneath it during that time, it can, over time, take pictures, collect data on the entire planet.
Right.
So the boom here is for the ground stations that are needed to retrieve and process the data that the polar satellites collect, and they have to be near the pole, near the North Pole or South Pole, as close as possible, so that they have more opportunities to collect the data from the polar satellites, which ground stations in Mexico or India or Africa would not have. They would, because it's, you know, the rest of the planet is going from east to west, but the polar satellite's going from north to south. So the northern and southern poles are where you'll have the most opportunities to collect the data.
Right. Now, it's interesting. I mean, I didn't do research on this and I don't have an answer, but it's interesting why they chose the Arctic and not the Antarctic. Right.
Yeah. My guess, just off the top of my uneducated head, would be that it's because there's more civilization around the North Pole than there is around the South Pole.
True.
Antarctica, the vast southern continent, there are some human outposts down there. Outpost, a word we learned yesterday, just a group of buildings, a settlement of some kind far, far away from cities or town, usually a military camp or a place for trade or science. But yeah, the North Pole, on the other hand, you have Norway, you have Russia, you have Alaska, you have, you know, more human settlements closer to it. So my guess is that's why. And I think the North Pole itself is a smaller landmass than Antarctica down in the south. Mm. So that may also make it easier to maneuver around there and to build things.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, basically what we're saying here is that as the need for technology grows and as technology becomes more and more prominent, then there is a need for more and more satellites. And all of these satellites and all the data that's being collected and transmitted, there needs to be these ground stations that are able to receive and transmit all this information.
Right. And there was one other brief point that the article makes. It's not its main focus, but it mentioned that climate change is further opening up the Arctic region to shipping.
Right.
Just, you know, ground-based ships going through the water, not talking about satellites here. But because things are slowly melting up there, it's become easier to ship products through the Arctic region to the other side of the planet. And so there's a big economic concern here, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yesterday we heard about Dead Horse, Alaska, which is an unlikely outpost and one of these places that is being the recipient of this Arctic satellite boom. And today we're going to hear about a couple of other places where people are also looking to build more of these ground stations. So without further ado, please join us for day two of this article. And we'll start where it says, an ideal location to look at orbit is Svalbard.
An ideal location to look up at orbit is Svalbard, a Norwegian archipelago that's the closest sizable habitation to the North Pole and connected via undersea cable to mainland Norway, a NATO member. The islands are home to Svalsat, the world's largest polar satellite ground station. However, A 1920 treaty forbids Svalbard's use for warlike purposes. That means data can't be downloaded for military use, said Ola Kokvik, the Svalsat director. The vulnerability of subsea cables creates another complication. A Space Norway link between Svalbard and the mainland suffered a power outage in 2022, and suspected saboteurs have targeted underwater data cables in the Baltic Sea. Those drawbacks are fueling demand for alternatives.
Okay, so we hear about Svalbard. And what is Svalbard?
Svalbard is a Norwegian archipelago. There's a big long word, archipelago, a group of small islands, that's all it really is, or an area of sea in which there are many small islands.
I think of like Japan or Indonesia.
Exactly. Yeah, it's actually a quite simple thing. Just the word is, for some reason, big and long, archipelago. Svalbard is a archipelago in Norway, in the region of Norway, and it is the closest, we were just talking about this, the closest sizable habitation to the North Pole, also crucially connected by undersea cable, via undersea cable, to mainland Norway, a NATO member.
Right. So remember yesterday we talked about that satellites need these fiber optic cables to transmit data. So without these fiber optic cables, the data that's collected have nowhere to go. So this is one of the main, I guess, benefits and one of the main things about this Svalbard that make it ideal for, you know, these ground stations, right? Okay, so it's the closest, meaning as close as possible, we talked about this, getting as close as possible to the North Pole. It's sizable, meaning that there's enough land, and habitation, meaning that this is a place that people can live. Yeah, right.
It is inhabited.
Yes. And it is connected. So that's very, very important. So the islands, okay, this archipelago, they're home to Svalsat, the world's largest polar satellite ground station. I'm assuming Svalsat is probably a combination of the word Svalbard and satellite.
That would be my guess too. Yeah. Yes. And a clever one.
Yeah. So Svalsat is the world's largest polar satellite ground station. But there's a problem. 1920 treaty forbids what?
The 1920 treaty forbids Svalbard's use for warlike purposes, in quote. Meaning, according to Svalsat director Ole Kokvik, that means data can't be downloaded for military use. That would be considered a warlike purpose, even if you're not at war.
Right.
So that puts limits on what, you know, these Arctic satellites. To be clear, when we're talking about these Arctic satellites and this whole Arctic satellite boom, we're not just talking about military applications. That is a significant part of it.
Right.
But it's not just about military satellites. But, you know, once a satellite's up there, you can use it to collect all kinds of data. So the potential is certainly there, and that's what this treaty is anticipating.
Yeah. So basically, since Norway is a NATO member, NATO meaning, again, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, it's basically a military organization that consists of several countries. They have this treaty that basically forbids Svalbard to be used for warlike purposes, which I feel like is a kind of very gray term.
Yes, yes, and perhaps deliberately so. Warlike purposes, a general term, a gray term, as you say, not clearly delineated, because is the collection of weather information using it for a warlike purpose? Well, you know, there's a new movie came out this year called Pressure, which was all about the weather forecast for D-Day, the great military invasion of Europe by the Allied powers in World War II. And the whole movie is about the importance of weather and how that affects the planning of the troop movements and the landing on the beaches of Normandy and so on and so forth. But at the same time, it's just weather data. They're not, you know, aiming guns or positioning lasers or anything. They're just collecting weather data. But, you know, that can be used for this purpose or that purpose.
Right. So anyway, there is this treaty. There is this treaty that is there. So they can't use it for military use, but they are able to collect other types of data from that satellite ground station, right?
Right.
There's also another vulnerability here, and that's the subsea cables.
Right. And this calls back to an important point from our article yesterday. That wonderfully named town in Alaska, Dead Horse, is become an unlikely outpost in the space race in the Arctic satellite boom because although it doesn't have a hospital, it doesn't have a bank, it doesn't have a school, it has fiber optic cables, which you need in order to transmit data. It has the infrastructure to support satellites. And that is what we're talking about here now in today's paragraph. Subsea cables are vulnerable to attack.
Mm-hmm.
And they're needed in order to, just like the fiber optic cables, they're needed in order to collect the data from the satellites, but they're also vulnerable.
Right. And not only are they vulnerable to attacks, just vulnerable to nature as well. I mean, they're under the sea. I'm sure there are, there's infrastructure in place to protect them. But you have to remember, fiber optic cables are very thin glass or plastic thread, right?
Mm-hmm.
So without protection can easily be damaged, right? And in fact, a Space Norway link between Svalbard and the mainland suffered a power outage in 2022. And suspected saboteurs have targeted underwater data cables in the Baltic Sea, right? And this could be a damaging military strategy, right?
This could be a warlike activity.
Because if you can't transmit the data, then you can't, sometimes communication is cut off and sometimes information doesn't get transmitted.
Yeah.
So there are drawbacks, and this is fueling the demand for alternatives.
Yes, and a wonderful warlike term there, or term that you hear in wartime, saboteur.
Mm.
A saboteur is someone who deliberately damages or destroys or spoils someone else's property or activities to prevent them from doing something. Technically, somebody could sabotage something in peacetime as well. Sometimes corporations in competition with each other will engage in acts of sabotage. But more often, I would say it's done in wartime, and someone who does it is referred to as a saboteur.
Yes, so a saboteur is someone who sabotages.
Exactly.
Yes. All right. So next, let's talk about Inuvik. Let's find out what is going on in Inuvik.
Inuvik, another hotbed of activity. A hub of Canadian activity is Inuvik, population about 3,300. The Northwest Territories town is home to ground stations owned by Canada and another owned by Norway's Kongsberg Satellite Services. Users include the French, German, and Swedish governments. Last year, the Inuvik Satellite Station facility added 5 more dishes, which Mayor Peter Clarkson estimated took the total to 13. And then the Swedes have put up another dish. Same thing. They're getting a broader customer base, he said. Other ways to transmit data. One factor that could make Arctic stations less important is the emergence of inter-satellite links to transmit data in space before sending to a terrestrial transmitter. All of a sudden, maybe it's not so important to have geographically remote ground stations, so long as you have enough satellites to relay data to each other, said Desmond Power, Vice President for Remote Sensing at SeaCorps, an operator of an Inuvik ground station. Even with such advances, satellite operators will likely keep observation points in the high north, said Marsh, of Space for Earth. Even with this high-tech, extremely capable inter-satellite laser communications, you're still limited by bandwidth, he said. It's still best if you have a big old dish and you have a nice fiber optic cable and you have no concerns about the amount of data you're doing.
All right, so Inuvik is another hotbed of activity. We talked about how up in the Arctic it is cold, but there is a hotbed of activity happening. So what does this term hotbed of activity mean?
Right. Hotbed of something just means a place which is particularly popular, where there's a particularly high level of energy around a particular product or a particular activity. We might say that, such and such a country or city is a hotbed of popular music, or another country is a hotbed of professional tennis talent. It just means that it has given rise to a lot of examples of great tennis players, or in the first example, of a certain kind of pop music, a hotbed of something, a place where you find a lot of the thing.
Mm-hmm. And it can also be negative, right? You might be a hotbed of crime.
Oh, yeah. It's not necessarily a good thing. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So Nuvik is a hub of Canadian activity, and there's a population of about 3,300, which is not a lot. That's actually less than the students that were in my high school.
Yeah.
So it's a small town, okay, small town. And the Northwest Territories, it's in the Northwest Territories, and it is home to ground stations owned by Canada and another owned by Norway's Kongsberg Satellite Services. Okay, and then users are not just Canadian or Norwegian. They have, the users are French, German, and Swedish. Yeah. Okay, so what did the Inuvik satellite station facility do last year?
Right, well, just last year they added five more radar dishes. And mayor of Inuvik, Peter Clarkson, estimated that makes for a total of 13 radar dishes at the Inuvik satellite station facility. And he's quoted as saying, "The Swedes have put up another dish." Same thing, meaning a continuation of what we're all talking about here. They're getting a broader customer base. And so here's our first real business term in our business article. But that's the point, that this is a growth industry,
yes.
Polar satellite ground stations.
Right.
And so if you're in that field, if this is a market you want to be looking into.
Right. So, what I find interesting is that, Inuvik is part of the Northwest Territories, which is a part of Canada, but you have all these other countries that are basically setting up satellite stations there.
Right, because France, lovely country, pretty far from the North Pole.
Just a little.
Yeah.
Just a little. Okay, and here we hear about other ways to transmit data, right? So one factor that could make Arctic stations less important is the emergence of inter-satellite links, right? So I think the idea here is rather than having one satellite that, orbits the Earth, you have a chain of satellites. Right.
Right, exactly.
And what is the benefit of that?
Well, what they do is they transmit data in space before sending it to a terrestrial transmitter. Terrestrial, a word that just means anything having to do with the Earth. And in this case, this is just another way of referring to the ground stations that we've been talking about throughout the article.
Mm-hmm.
With these inter-satellite links, the satellites transmit the data to other satellites before going to a ground station, which could potentially mean that you could have a ground station in Mexico, say, or India, or Africa, collecting data from polar satellites just as easily as a ground station in Inuvik or in Svalbard. What was it? Svalbard, right?
Yeah,
in Norway. So I like the way, sort of here at the end of the article, it's giving us a little perspective, saying that, it's a growth industry right now, these Arctic satellite stations, but keep an eye on the development of the technology, because there's also this alternative of using multi-satellite, inter-satellite links to transmit data.
Right. So it's not so important maybe that the ground stations are located in a place where the satellite passes over frequently, because you have more satellites up in space. And so, chances are one of these satellites will pass over your location.
Right.
Yeah. So it says here, all of a sudden, maybe it's not so important to have geographically remote ground stations as long as you have enough satellites to relay data to each other. Okay. So I think one analogy that I think of is, you know, maybe like a Wi-Fi in your house, right? We all have Wi-Fi, you know, transmitters in our houses, right? And obviously, the closer you can get, the stronger the signal is. The further away you get, the especially if you're in a room or you're upstairs or downstairs from the Wi-Fi transmitter, maybe the signal's not as strong. But if you have several, maybe you have that main transmitter, but then you have other hubs that kind of further the signal, then you're able to have signal wherever you are.
Right.
Yeah. So the goal here is, you know, there's different strategies in order to help us be able to transmit the data, right? But even with such advances, satellite operators will likely keep observing points in the high north. And why is that?
Right. Well, this is the opinion of David Marsh, whom we met yesterday, of this organization, Space for Earth. And he says that satellite operators will probably still keep observation points in the high north. That's a term for the Arctic region that I haven't heard before, but you can see where it comes from. The high north, very far north, way north, as we talked about. That even, he goes on to say, even with this high-tech, extremely capable inter-satellite laser communications, you're still limited by bandwidth. Bandwidth, the amount of information that can be carried through a telephone wire, a computer connection at a single time. So although you could have all these satellites up in space transmitting the data to one another down to your ground station in Mexico instead of Dead Horse, Alaska, nevertheless, you wouldn't be able to get as much data as quickly because the satellites, the inter-satellite transmission bandwidth is just not as wide as going directly from satellite to ground station.
Right. So if you think about the internet or satellite as kind of like a highway, right? It's like the information superhighway, right?
Yeah.
So the highway, there's only a certain amount of space. So if like a physical highway, this is why there's traffic during, you know, rush hour. There's only so many cars that can fit on the highway at one time.
Right.
So with this information superhighway, there's only so much data that can be transmitted at one time. Right. And that's going to limit how much information gets sent back and forth. Right. Now, this word bandwidth, yes, we're using it when we talk about technology, but you can also use it in life. Right. And this is a good word that you guys can incorporate in your life. Let's say, you know, you're really busy at work and your boss asks you if you can take on another project and you just feel like you don't have the mental capacity or time or energy to do that.
Right.
You can say, I'm sorry, I don't have the bandwidth to handle that right now.
Yeah, I've heard that the term used that way.
Right. This is a good term. So you don't necessarily just use it for technology. You can just use it for life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I currently don't have the bandwidth I have the bandwidth to handle that right now. Right. It just means that you have the capacity or capability to be able to manage whatever is being asked of you.
Right, right. And that's partly why the final quote here from David Marsh, he says, it's still best if you have a big old dish. Now, by that, he doesn't mean a dish that is big and old.
Right,
made in
1970 like this
or
rusty
yeah.
satellite dish.
He's not saying go out and find an old dish. A big old dish is sort of a colloquialism, just an English expression that means a big old something means something
rather large.
Rather
right?
large and kind of but reliable.
Yeah.
Like you'll also hear like a good old fashioned blah.
Yeah.
And that probably means that it is old, but it's good, it's reliable, it's a big old dish. Just, yeah, it means a very big dish and not really, its age is not the key point.
No, but just something that's traditional, something that's more standard.
Yes, there
right?
you go.
And just something is more common. So as much as new technology, new ways of doing things is great, but still, like, the standard way of doing things is still most reliable at this point.
Right. There's even a personal term for it, a good old boy.
Yeah.
You'll hear in America sometimes. That doesn't mean a boy who is old.
No.
It means just kind of a guy who's, like you said, traditional and kind of in a certain part of the country, in a certain, subcultures of the country. A good old boy.
Yeah. So a big old dish, and you have a nice fiber optic cable, and you have no concerns about the amount of data you're doing, right? Okay. So there is an interesting thing that's happening out in the Arctic. Again, I love reading Advanced. As we say, it is your window on the world, right? So you get to see and learn about different places of the world and industries that maybe you wouldn't necessarily be aware of if you weren't reading Advanced.
Yes, we are your window on the world, and the world is a big place.
Yeah, so there's a lot happening in different areas, a lot of developments that are growing in the Arctic, maybe not a place that you'll ever visit, but, you know, it does affect our lives in many ways, you know, and sometimes we're not aware of it. But, you know, it would be interesting to keep an eye on this area and see what developments happen. All right. But in the meantime, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about this topic of this Arctic satellite boom? Which one do you think is a better idea? To have one satellite that transmit data or a chain of satellites? Which one do you feel like is more effective? Write to us. Let us know your opinion. Let us hear from you. It's always great to kind of get some feedback on what you learned and what you feel like was beneficial for you. All right. Well, until next time, this is Campbell.
And this is Peter.
Thanks for joining us. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.